Hello, everybody. We're back with the wonderful Dr. Paul Lemansky here on Medical Monday. You know, I talk to a lot of doctors, and I have to tell you, this guy is terrific. He really thinks about things. Hello once again, and welcome back. Dr. Lemansky joins us today, and he'll be talking to you about cardiology and preventative medicine, and comes from the Center for Preventative Medicine and Cardiovascular Health, where he's founder and director. Dr. Lemansky is a board-certified internist with a master's degree in human nutrition, received a BA from Columbia College, Columbia University, and he received his MS from Columbia University, his MD from New York Medical College. These are colleges that are a long way from Guadalajara, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, 1-800-348-2551. I'll get a telephone call now. 1-800-348-2551. Prior to his work at the Center for Preventative Medicine, Dr. Lemansky was clinical chief for cardiovascular health for Kaiser Permanente Northeast Division, and he's currently assistant clinical professor of medicine at Albany Medical College, a fellow of the American College of Physicians. Paul, welcome back to Vox Pop. Love having you here.
It's good to be back.
Of course, you can post your comments at the bottom of today's show page at the Vox Pop section of our website, wmc.org/voxpop, or better yet, because it's simpler, you can just email us at roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Okay, so there you are. I want to ask you a couple of things. We heard yet another round of people who are talking about how important the Mediterranean diet is. First of all, on question one of your blue book, Paul,
sure,
please tell us what's in the Mediterranean diet. And question two, tell us, defend whether or not this could not just be a matter of genetics in Taiwan or where, actually, Okinawa, I believe.
Sure.
It's Okinawa. And it's also Crete, of all places.
Yeah, that's right. So Mediterranean diet basically is a plant-based diet, primarily. So you're looking at, vegetables, you're looking at legumes, you're looking at...
legumes are beans for,
yes,
for the uneducated.
Yes, right. Unprocessed grain or minimally processed grain. You're looking at some meat, some fish. The main fat source actually not coming from meat or fish, but actually coming from olive oil.
Oh, yeah.
So olive oil has got a small amount of saturated fat in it, as compared to other oils, as compared to the oils in meats. And therefore, if you look at the Mediterranean diet, it's relatively low in saturated fat, yet not necessarily low in total fat. And this is,
wait,
I think...
Can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
Patrick Donges is very angry with me because apparently I gave the wrong email address. It's VoxPop, not Roundtable. It's VoxPop@WMC.org. I do too many things for too many programs. Go ahead, Paul.
So a Mediterranean diet is consists primarily of a certain frequency of eating of these things, and therefore, if one were to compare it to a Western diet, as an example, there would be a lot less meat. Mediterranean diet has meat as a garnish rather than as a center central focus, and relies on its fat source primarily for... relies on olive oil as the fat source. And we don't exactly know the mechanisms of action of how a Mediterranean diet reduces cardiovascular risk. We know from both observational studies, from epidemiological studies, so in other words, looking at populations and the rates of disease within populations in Mediterranean countries, that certain chronic diseases occur with a lower frequency than they would occur in other Western countries like the United States. We also have clinical trial data, recent clinical trial of the Mediterranean diet, as well as Lyon diet heart study from about 10 years ago. That
Lyon in France as opposed to...
That is correct.
What is the big one here in the United States in Massachusetts? That one. Oh, yeah, well, it'll come...
Framingham study. So the there is both clinical trial data and other data, observational and epidemiological data, to suggest that Mediterranean diets reduce cardiovascular death. Now, Part of the more recent article on Mediterranean diet that was, I think, useful is that there are very certain specific things that one can do to define a Mediterranean diet. And, you know, as I've tried to do, you know, it has to have certain components to it. It's not that it requires, you know, very involved and deep understanding of or even of a given cuisine, or even of you know, you don't have to be, it doesn't have to be scripted for you in a very complex way.
No.
If you maintain
general categories.
Certain guidelines, exactly, certain guidelines, certain categories of food, if they're adhered to, will give you, you know, the great majority of the benefit without necessarily really learning how to cook in a Mediterranean way.
Interesting, because there's a whole bunch of new stuff about vitamin D that's out. Showing, you know, there are some doctors who really believe in vitamin D.
Right.
And there are some people who say, you know, it's been overrated. But there's some new stuff out that show that it has terrific properties for things like heart and, you know, other things. You trust it?
Well, you know, I think, that, again, we wait for, you know, randomized trials of vitamin D. And I've personally not seen any recent ones that would be definitive with regard to its benefits in outside of the areas of bone density, bone health. There are, of course, vitamin D receptors on all somatic cells in the body, and therefore there must be some purpose for them being there. It would therefore make sense that a certain minimum level of vitamin D would be beneficial to the proper functioning of the human machine. That said, you know, the data with regard to cancer, the data with regard to cardiovascular disease is certainly, from, you know, my reading of the recent literature, not definitive to say that you should take it for those reasons. That said, people with deficiency states defined specifically as less than 20 nanograms per ml of vitamin D in your blood.
What's ideal? 30, 50?
30 to 100.
30 is ideal?
Is ideal.
And 35, which is mine?
That's good. Okay.
Good, but not great.
No, that's perfectly fine. We don't know that 85 is any better than 25 or than 35, as an example. Okay, so within the normal range, we don't know that having a higher level is superior with regard to outcome compared to a lower level.
Now, the reason I asked you this question is because in the two sites that are always studied in these cardiovascular studies, people are standing outside a lot. It's hot,
right,
and there's a lot of sunlight.
Right.
That's vitamin D.
Yes, it is. In fact, that's the way that vitamin D is normally obtained. We don't obtain vitamin D from the diet primarily, even though people think about drinking milk and eating milk products. Those products are fortified. That is, vitamin D is added to them. It doesn't naturally occur in them. The only place where you would see some vitamin D is in some fatty fish. And mostly people are not going to consume enough of those things to maintain a normal vitamin D level in the blood in the absence of sunshine.
What are the fatty fishes?
Well, you know, the salmons and the, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, what I call the smash fish, sardines, mackerel, anchovies, salmon, herring.
Smash. I'm in trouble right here. Let me get a phone call in. Let's go to Lola in Utica. What number is that, Don Diego? 02. Okay. Lola, you're on.
This is Lou.
Sorry. Don Diego,
yeah, okay.
Was really
I'm curious about the doctor's diet.
You want to know what he eats.
Do you eat red meats? Do you eat sweets? How much fruit do you take?
Share that kind of information with anyone. But, well, you know, actually, right now, I eat all foods, okay, in moderation, right? So, you know, to say that I don't eat chocolate, as an example, would not be accurate, but I don't eat it very much of it. To say that I don't eat ice cream, I don't eat very much of it. So it's really not that I am eating any certain thing, but the frequency with which I eat these so-called bad things, the frequency with which I eat them is quite small.
And the man is as slim as a rail, Lou.
Well, what about fruits and vegetables? I mean, we're told you should have 6 or 7 servings of fruits and vegetables. It's difficult to do. And how much do you personally, what do you eat during the week?
difficult to do. Well, yeah, okay, so I can tell you what I had today for lunch before coming here.
Okay,
great. Right, so I had a high-protein pasta with tomato sauce on it, and on that I put pink salmon, which came in a packet, and I had that along with a pear and a banana. Okay.
That's two of your five.
Yeah, right. So you're
practicing what you preach.
Well, you know, what I'm actually, the thing I'm most interested in doing with what I preach, you know, I'm most concerned about the notion that people have suggested that a healthy diet, and specifically a heart healthy diet, is very expensive, and therefore, you know, poorer individuals within the population would not be able to afford to eat that way. So one of the things I'm trying to do is to prove that that's not the case by basically eating that way myself. The second issue is a lot of folks these days don't cook. So in other words, one of the other issues that I'm addressing is to try to structure food to eat that does not require a lot of cooking so that the average person, and I'm going to tell you, unfortunately these days, the average person refuses to cook, so the average person would still be able to prepare these meals with minimal time, minimal preparation.
So, for example, and we're running out of time, we got to do a break, but for example.
Well, like I said today, I mean, it takes me 10 minutes to make some pasta.
Throw it in a boiling
and dish. To put pink salmon on top of it.
Well, were you at work?
Yeah.
You did it at work?
No, I had prepared the pasta beforehand and I brought it with me.
Okay. Hey, Lou, that was a very good question. I'm surprised you didn't ask
me. Alan got a lot of information out of me about that.
I'm surprised you didn't ask me what I ate. But okay.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Right. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We'll take a fast break, and we'll be back with a fella from Amherst.
Support for WAMC comes from Premier Medical Group of the Hudson Valley, gastroenterology and urology specialists with offices in Dutchess, Ulster, and Orange counties. PremierMedicalHV.com. Skidmore College Master's Program, offering individualized graduate studies in a wide range of interdisciplinary fields. Masters at skidmore.edu. River Bend Animal Hospital, Route 9 in Hadley, Massachusetts, providing small animal medicine and wellness care, general and referral surgery, canine rehabilitation, laser therapy, and dentistry. RiverbendAnimal.com. New York Electric Motor Service, Glens Falls, New York, specializing in electrical and mechanical apparatus sales and service, a subsidiary of Applied Dynamics, NewYorkElectricMotorService.com. And Boyden and Perron, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services and a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years, BoydenandPerron.com.
And thanks to the magic of Zach the Engineer, we're back. We'll go now to Jake in Amherst. Jake, first of all, let me welcome you and tell you how important it is for us to hear from Amherst. We really appreciate your call.
Hi. My question is about hair health. In the winter, I wear a lot of hats, and I don't exercise that much. My hair starts to fall out, but in the summer, and I'm exercising, I don't wear a lot of hats, I notice, you know, my hair is fuller.
Mm-hmm.
I was, if there's any relation or anything I can do to eat for my hair health.
Well, as somebody who suffers from a little thinning of the hair.
I wasn't going to say that.
I wish I could say that. Certainly, you know, you put a hat on and there's going to be some traction on the hair follicles from the hat. So you're going to lose more hair, in the winter months. And that may be part of it. I would be surprised, though, that it would be to such a significant extent that you would actually see it and see a difference as compared to the summer. But that certainly would be one thing. I think a balanced diet, is essential. There are certain types of nutritional deficiencies which can result in hair loss, iron deficiency being one of them. But I think that it's a much more complex question than just diet. And the scalp actually would have to be examined to be able to determine what potential conditions might be causing hair loss. whether the hair loss would be on a genetic basis, whether the hair loss, you know, is it diffuse, is it patchy, are there actual areas of balding? All those issues would best be addressed with your primary care doctor at first, and then, you know, after some preliminary testing, seeing a dermatologist.
Paul, was your mother's father bald?
Yes.
So you have male pattern baldness.
Male pattern.
Yeah. Okay. Jake, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
I don't know what happened to him, but he's not there anymore.
Okay, let's go to Sarah from Williamsburg, and it's 1-800-348-2551. Your chances of getting in right now for the incredible Paul Lemansky are great. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hi. I have a question about the Mediterranean diet for the doctor.
Sure.
Every time I hear it described, it leaves out the fact that most of the people on that in that part of the world eat a lot of cheese, and they eat yogurt, they eat feta. I don't understand why it's never mentioned when there's a description of the Mediterranean diet, because that is animal food.
Yeah, but
that's
generally
question.
In the Mediterranean diet, okay, these things are going to be part of the diet, but they're not going to be a major part of the diet. Okay, so unfortunately, in America, what happens is that the amount and the frequency of things is misinterpreted typically. I think one needs to, you know, Mediterranean diet does have, you know, meat in it, but it doesn't have a lot of meat. It'll have, you know, cheese in it, but it doesn't have a lot of cheese. So if you look at, you know, we can buy in this country, you know, a block of feta cheese at a local grocery, and we put a lot more on this than someone in a Mediterranean country might. Why? Because they don't have as much money. That's why. Because they can't afford it as much. And so the proper frequency by which they eat these things actually was determined by what is available in their environment, and therefore what is the least expensive things in their environment. And they do have other more expensive components like cheese and like meat, but because of the relative cost, those are eaten with less of a frequency.
I lived in Istanbul for a couple of years,
okay.
and there was a lot of cheese and yogurt. It was sold from day to day.
Well,
there wasn't much meat. That's true.
Well, you know,
but cheese was a major part of the diet.
And unfortunately, you know, depending upon, you know, Istanbul is a large metropolitan city. Okay, and I'm going to suggest to you that the Mediterranean diet is being slowly supplanted by the Western diet. That's true also for the Cretan diet. So as people become more Westernized, they add more meat to the diet, they'll add more cheese to the diet, they'll add more fat to the diet. They're getting farther away from what traditionally has been. And we really talk about Mediterranean diet, we're talking a traditional Mediterranean diet, not necessarily what it's become in a lot of the larger cities. So, you know, for all I know, the types of foods that you get in Istanbul, because of the fact that the population has more money, are going to reflect that socioeconomic level and actually start to approximate what you see in other cities that have a similar, you know, socioeconomic level. Obviously, there are going to be local differences, but there's going to be more meat and there's going to be more fat added in metropolitan and urban areas than there would be in rural areas.
And I'd like to add something to that. So, Sarah, if you go into, you're an American, you go into a store in Istanbul, obviously stores will have a lot of things, if you're following me. And if you're an American, you see all of the cheese that's sitting there, you say, okay, I'll have some of that cheese. But, you know, the fact that they have a lot doesn't mean people eat a lot.
Yeah.
Well, I would beg to differ on the yogurt department. Uh-huh. That's sold all over Turkey, and it's sold from door to door.
And it may indeed.
It's a major part of the diet.
Yeah, we're not trying to question your veracity with regard
no,
to
yeah,
how it's
no,
done. I mean, I've not been to Istanbul. I can't really comment directly, nor do I have any direct.
I didn't go.
Nor do I have any direct medical knowledge of the diets in that are consumed in Istanbul.
All right.
That said, you know, if one looks at the general way that Mediterranean culture, and you know, we really can't separate, you know, really the Mediterranean diet from the Mediterranean lifestyle. So one of the benefits of living in a Mediterranean country, in addition to the fact that you get this, it's warmer, is that people tend to exercise a bit more in Mediterranean countries. Now, I would think that's true in Istanbul as well.
Certainly it is. And they're outside more. They get more sunshine. Yeah, there are a lot of basic differences. But in my personal experience, the cheese and yogurt aspect is a large part of their diet.
One would have to look at the total amount of saturated fat that was consumed.
Okay.
So it's difficult to talk without specifics.
Right. Well, it's not cow milk.
That's
the difference to begin with.
Yes.
It is a difference.
And one would look at the total amount of saturated fat consumed and the total calories consumed in a day. And also one would have to additionally look at the body mass index of individuals consuming that food.
Right.
So I'm going to argue, although this has not been proved in clinical trials, it's what most of us suspect, that closer to a normal body mass index, the composition of the diet becomes less important than when the body mass index is much higher.
Okay, so thank you, Sarah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, bye. We'll take the next call in a minute, but exercise my prerogative here. As you know, Paul, I'm on the no sugar, no white diet. Nothing white, nothing sugar.
Right.
That last call leads me to ask you whether or not yogurt is white.
The last time I looked, it was.
Well, you see what I mean? Does it fit into the white bread category? It's something white. So I have to know. I've been avoiding it because it's white.
Well,
I have to know whether or not I can eat this stuff.
The thing that makes, when we talk about, you know, those things which are white, avoid, white tends to be,
bread.
Associated with a purified, refined product as opposed to non-white product. And I think that's what it refers to. So, you know, yogurt made with goat's milk as opposed to cow's milk or, you know, I'm not sure what the color would be. I don't really, I couldn't comment on that. But, I would suggest that, one would like to have it carry out to all examples, Alan, but I don't think it does. There is some carbohydrate in yogurt. That carbohydrate is lactose. If it's, for example, made with cow's milk, it's going to be lactose. And that lactose is a disaccharide, which breaks down in the body to glucose and galactose. So it does contain some sugar. Higher protein yogurts may have less per volume than lower. In America, of course, we mix, preserves with it.
That's very bad.
Very bad. Increases the content of sugar rather substantially. But, I think yogurt is a reasonable, again, taken in moderation, is a reasonable source of protein, very reasonable source of protein, a very good source of protein. People need protein.
Well, I Rosella's yogurt, but I tend to be very specific about this diet. If it's white,
I think that's as a general rule of thumb, that's useful. It's not going to hold in all circumstances for every specific product you can think of.
Okay. Well, people are on the phone. Let's go to Jessica. Okay, Jessica, time for you.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Doctor. Was happy to hear you just say about the Mediterranean diet. Their culture is different. I lived in Italy for a year, and the diet was excellent, but so was all the walking we did everywhere and bicycling. My question is about vascular health and varicose veins specifically and spider veins. My father and my paternal aunt and I all have very bad varicose veins on one leg. I've done lots of reading on them. I'm trying to avoid surgery, but can you recommend anything else we can all do? And maybe I have daughters. I'm hoping they won't suffer from them as well. Thank you.
I know of nothing specifically to prevent varicose veins other than staying off your feet for long periods of time. So,
which is impossible.
That's the usual response.
Right.
We've been painted into this corner and we can't get out of it in any way. This, if you can't use leg elevation, okay, mm-hmm. which is the tried and true method of decreasing, swelling of leg veins from standing, and there's this pooling of blood in the veins, then a use of a vascular hose, so a stocking which has a graded compression with the least compression as you're going towards the heart and the most compression farthest away from the heart, helps to keep swelling from occurring in the legs. And also keeps, and this is the important point, because what happens with varicose veins, every few centimeters in your veins, there is a small valve, a one-way valve. So when blood is pressed by the muscle against the skin, what happens is it moves up the leg vein, and the valve closes behind it, and therefore there is no extra pooling of blood. However, situations can arise where the valve itself becomes damaged, and therefore the column of blood above it is increased in size, and therefore the pressure at the base of that column is going to be increased such that it begins to degrade other valves, that the valves that are lowest down in the leg. And so there's a process. Once you knock out one valve, you start to knock out another valve and then another valve and then another valve until you have a huge column of blood and the process accelerates. That can be arrested by the use of vascular hose. The problem with vascular hose in the summertime is that it's hot. Yeah. It's hot.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
In the wintertime, it's probably an acceptable way to stave off this type of varicosity. When varicosities in the legs become, and these are veins that are become dilated and the valves, the valve competence has been compromised, when these veins can be operated on, okay, to pull it out, we generally don't like to do that if we can get away with it. We don't like to do that kind of surgery. It will remove the cosmetic portion of a varicose vein, which doesn't look to people pleasing, but it doesn't really solve the problem completely either. That problem requires us to put our legs up. That problem requires us to eat less salt. That problem requires us to get some daily exercise. In the absence of those things, as time passes, most people are going to develop some varicose veins, some spider veins, and this is part of the aging process.
Yes, but are they bad for you?
They're only bad for you if you don't address, again, the consequences, which can be that you get rather significant progression of disease over time, and then chronic swelling of the leg. Mm. Then what goes from there, you get chronic swelling, the skin breaks, you get infections in the cellulitis, infections in the skin. So,
right.
So. All of this natural, we say we don't have time to do things. We don't have time to exercise. We don't have time to eat right. We don't have time to do this, that, or the other. And then because we don't have time to do these things, we end up with a bad outcome and we're not happy about it. And we want, somehow to magically be made to go away.
Yeah, but some people do surgery, right?
Some people do surgery. What the problem with surgery is if you take out too many veins.
Yeah.
The blood is going into the legs through arteries and has to come out of the leg through veins. If you take out too many veins, there are not enough veins for the blood to return from the leg back to the heart, and the leg will swell.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So there is a limit to how many of these veins can be removed safely.
Okay, Jessica, thanks for the call. Appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep. 1-800-348-2551. J.D. in Springfield. Okay, JD, you're on.
Thank you for taking my call. Listen, I've been listening to you. It's really helpful, and I've heard about this Mediterranean diet, and I'm not sure that I haven't been following that, kind of just because that's the way I tend to eat. But I've been watching Americans, and it seems like whatever is the popular advertised cure-all or cure-something, that Americans follow that for a while, and then they're on to the next popular thing. Is that just an illusion? Or
no, that's absolutely the case.
So I've been on all of them, J.D. You name it, I've been on it.
Atkins, Alan is a perfect example.
How does it work, Alan?
You name it. But I find that this Weight Watchers, but I find this diet is the best of all. They know nothing white, no sugar.
Oh, well, I gave up the refined white stuff, you know, a while ago.
Well, that's right.
And so I try to avoid that. So, I also try to avoid synthetic things, and I also only eat quality things.
The reason why, your observation is correct from my understanding and my observation, okay? And I think the reason is that America does not have a specific cuisine like Italy might, or like Greece might, or China, okay? And so we tend to get our nutrition information, you know, through watching other people eat. To be fair, we are a melting pot, but watching other people eat or listening to the recommendations of people who have actually no nutritional training whatsoever. And I think that's a problem.
But we're also relatively wealthy, and we have a tendency to be, large.
Well, I tried to follow what my grandmother told me, you know, eat close to the ground and eat the whole thing.
I think your grandmother was very wise.
Eat close to the ground.
So,
what does that mean?
And she didn't know anything about all this other stuff.
Yeah, but I'm asking the nutritionist here. What is, Dr. Lemansky, what does that eat close to the ground mean to you?
I think, what you want to do is again, if you were to go into a grocery store.
Eat worms?
Eating worms are vegetarian, so yes, that might not be a bad idea. High in omega-3. If you go to a grocery store, if you were to eat the foods in the produce section, so you tend to stay around the perimeter of the store where originally all the
green stuff.
The green stuff and the refrigeration actually was occurring. And in the center of the store, you'd have more of the products.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you stay away from products and you stay with what's natural, close to the earth.
Yeah.
Close to the earth, meaning close to, you know.
Right.
Their,
right.
The original.
It comes in a box or in it, and it's got more.
Exactly.
Like
that's not close. You can't.
I
can't go outside and find a box of pasta, okay, in a field somewhere, okay? So if you stick close to the earth, close to what is actually the natural product, you're going to be better off. And why are you going to be better off? Because that's what the human machine over hundreds of thousands of years became adapted to. This product stuff is only in the last couple hundred years.
Okay, we're going to take up right from there. Hey, J.D., as always, thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from St. Francis Hospital and Health Centers Poughkeepsie, serving the healthcare needs of the community, including trauma and emergency care and the Center for Robotic Surgery, sfhospital.org. Washington County Tourism announcing Farm and Fiber Tour, featuring spinning, knitting, and weaving demonstrations, showcasing alpacas, goats, sheep, and more this Saturday and Sunday, WashingtonNYCounty.com. Woodstock School of Art, offering classes and workshops in drawing, painting, printmaking, sculpture, and more for all levels. Tuition assistance available, WoodstockSchoolOfArt.org. Women's Health and Fitness Expo, Miller School, Kingston, featuring fitness demonstrations, seminars, workshops, and more, 8:30 till 4 p.m. May 4th. Sponsored in part by MarkerTech, WomensHealthExpo.com. And Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology, surgery, and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery. VESHDeerfield.com.
one 800 348 2551. Proof that I'm eating something I shouldn't be eating. Let's go to Kate in Lenox. Hi, Kate.
Hello.
Hi, Kate. You're on.
Hi. I have a question about, I had a spontaneous clot in my right leg 2 years ago in January in the lesser saphenous. Mm-hmm. They didn't put me on any blood thinners. I had to be off my feet for a few weeks.
You had to be off your what?
Feet.
I had to be off my feet, my leg elevated for 3 or 4 weeks. I wondered, they told me after, they didn't, as I said, I wasn't put on blood thinners, but they told me that I would probably get varicose veins. I have not, as of this point, gotten any in that leg. I had all kinds of clotting tests, and they didn't find anything wrong. What would cause something like that?
Well,
I mean, I am on my feet a lot.
Well, it depends upon whether the leg vein involved was a superficial vein or whether it was a deep vein. So you've heard of deep venous thrombosis. That's
right.
Those are bad. Those are bad. And because, why? Because the clots in the deep system have a direct pathway up into the inferior vena cava into the heart. So you can have a clot break off, go up to the heart, through the heart, into the lungs, cause a pulmonary embolus, and if it's large enough, it can kill you.
Right.
Different from deep venous thromboses or superficial thrombophlebitis, which is a clot in a superficial vein in the leg. Those do not have...
Like the lesser saphenous is where my...
Well, I couldn't say. You would have to see what your ultrasound looked like.
I think Nixon had one.
Nixon had a deep... actually had a deep venous thrombosis. I'm assuming from what you tell me, regardless of what you're saying, I'm assuming that because the choice was made not to anticoagulate you with warfarin or Coumadin, that it must not have been in the deep system. It must have been superficial.
Yeah, he told me the vein didn't have good connections.
That's right. Because a superficial vein, has to go through a number of different branches before it could ever get up to an area where it could gain direct access to the inferior vena cava, which is a straight shot to the heart and lungs.
So what kind of things would I have to do to keep from ever getting one of those again?
Well, generally speaking, the causes of a superficial thrombophlebitis, a clot in a superficial vein, is some sort of trauma to the vein, sort of trauma to the vein that you might not even remember, might have hit your leg. It tends to be tender, however. So.
It was. It was very sore.
Right.
And I actually was diagnosed with a Baker's cyst, but it turned out 3 days later when I had the ultrasound, they found it was a clot, not a cyst.
Okay. This is not clear to me because normally superficial thrombophlebitis is not diagnosed by ultrasound. Usually that's what a deep clot is diagnosed. So, there's a little bit of confusion to the picture here. But essentially, a superficial thrombophlebitis would be very tender, might be an area of redness. You could actually feel along the vein, and it would feel both tender and what we call a cord, a thrombosed section where the clot would follow the outlines of the arteries. So it would feel like a little tube, little rubber tube within the vein. That would be treated with hot packs and elevation. Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory agents, things like that. Deep clot causes aching in the leg, pain on walking, and those, swelling of the extremity, the lower leg would swell or could swell, and those would be treated first diagnosed with an ultrasound and then subsequently treated usually with warfarin.
Okay, Kate, your time is up.
Thanks
a lot.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Yep, bye.
1-800-348-2551. Estelle in Clifton Park. All right. Estelle, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, Dr. Lemansky. Your name was given to me by Dr. Trafetti.
Yes.
And I wondered if you could recommend a local weight support group other than Weight Watchers, Overeaters Anonymous, or TOPS, or if you, in fact, lead some sort of weight support groups?
Well, my practice, Center for Preventive Medicine, does engage in weight support programs. Weight Watchers, you mentioned, I think, is very good for losing a few pounds. The average person, who has 20 or more pounds to lose or 30 or 40 pounds to lose may not find Weight Watchers gives them results quickly enough to help sustain motivation. And therefore, some other approach might be indicated. Other approaches could be, you know, high protein, low carb diet, or using a product like Metafast or Optifast, or even better, you know, I think to sort through these various options, it's really optimal to see a dietitian, a registered dietitian, who would hear what you like to eat, would hear what you have succeeded with in the past and not succeeded with in the past with regard to diets, and then could be able to make a recommendation to you. So I would say, you know, if you asked your primary care doctor to send you to a registered dietitian, they would be best able to come up with a series of options that you could choose from.
Okay, I thank you very much.
And thank you for calling. Yep. With us now is Professor Patrick Danger, who has a question driven by the social media. Professor?
Hello. Hi. So we've got Jen from Facebook, or Jen on Facebook, I should say, asks, Doctor, what are your thoughts on the paleo diet?
I was going to ask you that, too, if I had a chance. That means you eat a dinosaur, right?
Dinosaur. Dinosaur meat. No. Paleo diet is very meat-based diet,
right, right,
on the presumption that, you know, many thousands of years ago, cavemen ate primarily meat.
They didn't grow corn.
Exactly. And therefore, if we approximate the diet that of, you know, where our ancestors, where our genetics were programmed, that would be most healthful for us. I really am not a subscriber to the paleo diet. I think that it relies on too much meat. You know, any diet which reduces total caloric intake will cause weight loss.
Right.
And if you go on a paleo diet and lose weight, great. I think it's great. On the other hand, if you're using a paleo diet to maintain weight, I do not think there is sufficient evidence to suggest that that kind of an approach is healthful over time.
Will it drive your sugar numbers up if you eat a lot of meat?
No, it'll drive them down.
Really?
Drive them down. But, you know, so will weight loss by whatever means. You know, if you eat a lot of meat, Alan, the meat contains no sugar, no carbohydrate whatsoever.
Right.
Okay, so you shouldn't, if you're seeing sugar numbers go up on the paleo diet,
if you are,
we need to look into that.
I see.
Evaluate that. But I think that the, you know, there's insufficient data to suggest that the paleo diet is superior to a Mediterranean diet.
And what else? Isn't there some other thing that doctors are putting out there now besides the paleo diet? It's sort of like the prime, I don't know.
Well, there's probably a diet a minute that comes out with somebody, you know, suggesting that it's the solution or the answer to obesity. And I would argue all diets work for a time.
Yeah.
As long as they reduce the caloric intake sufficiently.
So if I, on my old white diet, no sugar, go into the refrigerator and look hopelessly for something in there, and there's nothing, because nothing fits that, then I'm off of all those other things which I might eat.
That's right. And what you're basically doing is restricting calories. And by whatever means you restrict calories, okay, you're going to, you know, as long as compared to what you're burning, if you're restricting calories sufficiently, you will lose weight.
Okay, let's go to Bill in Clifton Park. You didn't have anything else, did you, Patrick?
That was it. Thank you.
Okay, Bill in Clifton Park.
Hi. I was wondering if you're familiar with the book by Dr. Steven Sinatra, and it's called The Great Cholesterol Myth.
Well, I haven't read the book, but I've heard about it from my patients.
Okay, the subtitle is Why Lowering Your Cholesterol Won't Prevent Heart Disease. And he basically is saying it's inflammation that's the problem, not cholesterol.
Well, you know, if one asks then the question, what causes the inflammation, I will tell you that oxidized LDL in the artery wall is what causes inflammation. And whether you're arguing it's the inflammation or the cholesterol, which came first, the chicken or the egg, I'm going to suggest to you that when the cholesterol is lower, the inflammation is less.
Do you think statins are a good idea then?
If you have sufficient risk, a statin is the only, or I should say the most widely documented benefit drug to reduce both cholesterol and events. So We need to be clear that while reducing cholesterol appears to be a good idea, that we have data showing that reducing it in a specific way with a specific drug, a statin, reduces events, heart attacks and strokes. There are other drugs that reduce cholesterol, but don't necessarily have data to show they reduce events. We're waiting for that data to come about. So in the meantime, though, there are more than 100,000 randomized patients on statins that prove that there is a benefit and that the benefit far exceeds the risk. That doesn't mean there is no risk. It simply means...
What's the risk?
Well, the risk is going to be probably up to between 8 and 10% of the population is going to develop some muscle ache on a given dose of a statin.
Why is that such a risk?
Well, you know, it's muscle inflammation. You have to stop the drug or you have to cut back on the drug.
Or change it.
Some people will, you know, have something called rhabdomyolysis occur when they're not being watched closely enough, primarily. And those individuals, you know, can have kidney failure as a consequence of the use of the drug. There have been deaths as a consequence of the use of the drug. Those, however, are the exception and not the rule. And these drugs are extremely safe, especially when used under a physician who is monitoring you appropriately.
Bill, I got to let you go.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, let's go to Ann. Okay, Ann, very quickly, because we're running out of time here. Go ahead. Hey, Ann.
Hi. Hi, Doctor, and hi, Alan. I have high cholesterol, and a friend of mine just told me that because my blood pressure is low, I don't really need to worry about my arteries being clogged, because if they were already clogged, my blood pressure would reflect that. Is that true?
No.
No. Oh, too bad. I was hoping it was true.
I wish things were that easy.
No. Oh, too bad.
I will tell you, though, that when you have both high cholesterol and high blood pressure, that does accelerate the atherosclerotic process. That is, deposition of that cholesterol into the artery wall.
All righty.
Thanks,
yeah.
Ann.
Thank you.
Okay, let's go to Helena in West Hurley. Helena, you're on, but you've got only a minute.
Real quickly, yogurt. I like mine whole and plain, and whole fat and plain, and low fat does not do anything for me, and no fat. I think that should be taken off the market, because I understand they use fillers that aren't very good for you. And people that tell me, "Oh, I'm on a yogurt diet," and then they have all that sugar on it. It's just crazy out here. And people, you know, think they're going to eat that yogurt and live to be 100 years.
Okay, that's your statement. Oh. Now, what's Paul? You have a response to that?
Well, no. I'm waiting for the question.
Is there a question?
The question is, am I all right with the whole plain? I know the low fat. What is truly? Would I be doing myself a favor health wise if I went to try to develop a taste of the low fat versus the whole fat?
Well, ma'am, that all depends on how much yogurt you're eating. I mean, if you're eating yogurt breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or you're eating large portions at any one meal, you know, my suggestion to you would be you'd have to discuss this with either a registered dietitian or your physician, but. I generally don't like my patients to have more than about 15 grams of saturated fat a day. So if you want to look and see how many grams of saturated fat you're getting in your whole yogurt and make sure that when incorporated into your daily diet, it's less than 15 grams, then I think it's fine.
Okay. Very good. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling.
Yeah, peace.
Okay, we're done. We're just about out of time. Thank you to everybody who called. Paul, thank you for being with us, Dr. Paul Lemansky. The Hospitals of HealthQuest. Underwriting support for the Medical Monday comes from the Hospitals of HealthQuest and HealthQuest Medical Practice, physicians offering primary and specialty health care in private office settings throughout the Hudson Valley. 1-888-525-4767 for appointments. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us. Our engineer has been the incomparable Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Zorro himself, Matt Don Diego. Our producer is Patrick Donges. I'm Alan Shartok. On tomorrow's program, an open forum. Now, stay tuned now for a news update, and because we're a minute ahead of ourselves, probably for a very interesting promo.